welcome to this week's special episode of the Cricket Her Weekly. We've literally just come to record this from watching the very end of the World Cup final. It's a bit of a mad dash because I'm between filing pieces. Sid hasn't filed his piece yet. And we normally do a bit of a plan. I don't know whether it comes across in these episodes that we plan them normally.
We really do, honestly.
But on this occasion, we're just doing it totally off the cuff. So it might go horribly wrong, Sid. But there we go.
We've already filled 30 seconds with that, ref. So.
just chattering on. Okay, so obviously Australia are World Cup champions. They've taken England's cherished 50 over crown, won in 2017. It's not really a surprise. This is kind of the result everyone predicted. That's fair, isn't it, Sid?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we said beforehand that Australia were the favourites and it would, you know, take quite something to knock them out. I still continue to believe that 2017, that was the case as well, that Australia, I think if they'd got to the final, if they hadn't been Harman monstered, they would have won the World Cup there as well. You know, but they've just taken things up to a different level in this World Cup. They've gone undefeated through the tournament. And today was just like, you know, let's take we've already turned the volume up to 11. Where do you go from there? Well, you go up to 12. And they turned it up to 12. And England just could not have anticipated that. So England, they won the toss and they chose to put Australia in. Yeah. And people were quite quickly saying that that was a huge mistake, Raf. What's your perspective on that?
Well, it's definitely a gamble, isn't it? Because you end up with this scoreboard pressure, runs on the board in the final. That's what everyone was saying, isn't it? That runs on the board in the final are worth a lot. And obviously, as it transpired, now people will go, oh, that, you know, that makes Heather Knight look stupid. In fact, I think I've just said in my Guardian report, it made Heather Knight look stupid. But I think that your point, which I kind of agree with, is that actually it was a kind of throw of the dice. And we can look back on it now and go, well, it went wrong. But if they'd taken, you know, three quick Australian wickets, then, you know, that was the way to win the game. And that was obviously Heather Knight's tactic. That's what your perspective on it is, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, I think that England's only chance was to try and bowl Australia out reasonably cheaply. And even by reasonably cheaply, we're still talking about, you know, 250. We'd seen that England could reasonably easily chase, you know, 280 today. You know, at the end of the day, by the time that it came towards the last little bit of the match, then, you know, England obviously were not going quite as fast as they maybe could have done if they were actually chasing, you know, 295 or something. You know, they might have gone a bit quicker, or if they'd been a bit closer to the number of overs. So England definitely had the capacity to chase a smaller score, but by the time, you know, Australia got going, you know, there was just no stopping them. And, you know, it was that crucial opening stand, wasn't it? They didn't lose wickets, and that left the capacity to do something quite remarkable in the last 10 overs.
I mean, you get to 160 for no wicket, and that's your platform then for the rest of the game. And that meant that Mooney could come out. She was kind of promoted up the order to keep that left-hand, right-hand combination going. Could just come out and bat with total freedom. And there were several times when, you know, the ball went just past the fielder, or they were kind of running very frantically. But they didn't have to worry too much because you've got 9 wickets in hand. Who cares?
No, there was total license to take risks in the last 10 overs. And we spoke earlier in the tournament about, you know, Australia, you know, and we were like, oh my goodness, Australia have racked up 100 runs in the last 10 overs. And it was even more today. They racked up 120 in the last 10 overs. And that they lost wickets while doing so, but it just didn't matter because, you know, there were more batters set to come in. And, you know, Talia McGrath could come in and hit a few runs at the end. And you know, the fact that, you know, Ash Gardner could come in and just slog it and go, well, you know, okay, I got caught, it doesn't matter.
Oh, well.
And that's what that platform gives you.
And the really striking thing for me was that all the talk pre-final was, oh, will Elise Perry be fit to bat? And actually, you know, she only ended up, I think she faced 10 balls or something right at the end. But if they hadn't had her, then it wouldn't really have made much difference. If you think about the equivalent for England, you take out one of your major all-rounders and you're nervous about...
Take out Nat Siver,
exactly,
England's only all-rounder,
exactly,
really.
So you take out Nat Siver and you go, is she going to play on the eve of the final? England would be really nervous about that. They'd be really concerned.
Well, where would they have been without Nat Siver?
Well, exactly. Well, they would have been 148 runs less, wouldn't they? Should we talk about that innings from Nat Siver? Because actually, I think I've just said in my Guardian piece, on another day against another opposition, that innings would win you the game every time.
England scored more runs than that total would have won them every single World Cup final that's ever been played.
Exactly.
You know, it was, I think, the sort of fifth or something highest run chase ever. Obviously, you know, in a losing cause, as the like some like four of the five top run chases are. But, you know, given how many Australia have put on the board, you know, it just looked it was remarkable that England got that close, to be honest.
Yeah, I think we have to give them a lot of credit for that. We have to give the batters a lot of credit for that. And I think particularly Charlie Dean, actually, coming in that... Was she coming in at number 10?
Yes, Charlie Jean's somebody that, you know, we've seen as a batter previously at county and things. She hasn't had the most opportunities since the county system gave way to the regional system, because obviously at Vipers we've got two problems at Vipers. You know, you've got the problem that you know, people like Georgia Adams at the top of the order and Danny Wyatt, who was played a lot of the games at the beginning of last season for Vipers because she wasn't selected for England at the beginning of last season.
Yeah.
So they're scoring so many runs up top that, you know, by the time it gets down to Charlie Dean coming in at 6,
doesn't get a look in.
She's not getting a look
yeah.
in. And obviously then she didn't play the last bit of the RHF last year because she was playing for England.
Yeah.
And the same thing's going to be true again next year. It's going to be difficult for her to find those opportunities. And that's kind of a little bit of a problem with the regional system there, because, you know, it's going to be really important for her to hopefully find those opportunities to get better with the bat, because that's something that England have kind of not been great at. You know, there's clearly some batting potential to Sophie Eccleston, for example, but she remains really very much a sort of a tail ender, and you sort of feel that England maybe could have developed that a bit more. And it's really important for England to find ways to develop Charlie Dean going forwards, because she really definitely started off at county as more of a batter who could bowl a bit,
exactly.
And she's definitely got batting potential there. A big part of why Hampshire won two county championships in the last days of that.
I think she was batting at sort of... Trying to draw breath now, Sid. I think she was batting at 3 or 4 for Hampshire back in those county days. And I think that she needs to find her opportunities for England. I think they need to give her more opportunities themselves as a team. They shouldn't be batting her at number 10. It's ridiculous. She should be batting at 6 or 7. Certainly ahead of Catherine Brunt, if Catherine Brunt carries on after this tournament, which is obviously yet to be determined. And we think we're probably going to have a fuller post-mortem on the vodcast in next week's episode, because this is just very immediate reaction. But I was so impressed with the way that she batted today.
Yeah, she played some lovely shots,
yeah,
didn't she?
Yeah, she did. And having that real quick-fire partnership, there were definitely people on Twitter thinking that her and Siva were going to somehow get England across the line. I was just sort of thinking, oh, hang on, am I going to have to do a massive dramatic rewrite? And then, sadly, she got out. But she got out in the way that she should have been playing, which was to be aggressive, to take on the bowlers.
Yeah, she definitely had to be playing positively at that point. And England had to be playing positively throughout. And that's what they did very much. They came out and they said, look, the only way we're going to win this game now, given what's happened, is to play really positive cricket. Tammy Beaumont, for example. So Tammy Beaumont, most of this tournament has started off pretty slowly. So she's made up for a little bit later in her innings, but mostly she started off going at a strike rate of sort of 40 or 50 for the first 20 or 30 balls of her innings. She went at 100 from straight away. There was definitely a different attitude. She obviously, you know, she obviously talked through that with the coaches and her teammates and said, I'm going to go straight for it from the first. Yep. And, you know, that's put England in a position where they also had a problem. They were ahead on the worm for almost the entire game.
It's amazing.
But, of course, Australia's huge finish is what did for them there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, gosh, I mean, it's a bit shell-shocking to look to try and reflect so quickly on the game. I don't know how the people on the telly are able to do that.
They take notes, Sid. We've just totally gone in at it cold. I think, I suppose it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because in a way, England batted really well. Was it the bowlers then that cost us the game, do you think, by conceding that many runs? I just heard Heather on the TV say that she thinks that 300 was about par on this pitch, and obviously Australia got far beyond that, which is kind of, you know, interesting. And I mean, I know you've been crunching the numbers through the tournament, which shows that the England bowling started off kind of down here and has gradually gone upwards.
Yeah, it has done, but I think there's a little bit of an element of that about the order of England's games.
Okay.
So, you know, they had their hardest game, obviously the Australia game up front, and they had some easier games at the end, which gave their bowlers a chance to kind of readjust all their numbers and to kind of push them upwards. And at the end of the day, you know, We know that England are a reasonably capable bowling side, and they've got, you know, a huge amount of experience in that bowling attack, particularly the seam attack. But on the other side of the coin is that what we've really seen is that they haven't been able to take wickets, and they, you know, given the mood Australia were in today, they weren't able to take the wickets again. Is it England's bowlers' fault though that Australia have this supreme unbeatable batting lineup going on? You know, nobody was beating them. So
yeah,
I find it hard to
hand,
kind of start shooting our bowlers.
But on the other hand, in the World Cup final, in what's meant to be the biggest game of the two best sides in the world, Australia have gone out and hit their biggest total of the tournament. So it's not just a continuation of what they've been doing all tournament. It's actually another step up. And I do think that there's something in that about, you know, that we talked last week about how we think Catherine Runt's maybe, you know, been a great servant of English cricket, but perhaps a bit past her best. Anya Shrubsole came on at the back end today and took some wickets, but it was kind of at a moment in time when it was sort of set up for her to do that because the Australian batters at that time, as you say, were just taking them on.
Yeah, and we were back with Anya in particular to the kind of the situation that that we've seen so much this winter, where the Australians just know what to expect, and you know, that they were just dealing with it. So, you know, Anya was getting exactly the same kind of swing as Megan Shute, but you know, the England batters were like, Megan Shute, oof, who's she? We're not acting like we've seen her before. Oh gosh, she's swinging it. Which way she's swinging it? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
Whereas the Australian batters were like, yeah, we know what's going to go on here, and it's like the Australians are so well prepared for those eventualities. And again, it made Anya look a bit toothless, and Catherine Brunt as well.
Yeah, and I was just going to say about Sophie Eccleston as well. There's something a bit strange about the fact that she's the number one bowler in the world and the leading wicket taker in the tournament, and yet she's got this slightly iffy record against Australia. And I don't know what it is, because I don't watch her when she bowls against Australia and think, oh, she's bowling particularly differently or particularly badly. It just somehow seems to be that the Australians...
But they have the ability to make
heads.
Everybody look bad. They've made the South Africans look bad. Yeah. They've made the Indians look bad. They've made England look bad.
But
so
England are so reliant on Eccleston to come out. Even if they go, you know, let's say that Brunt and Shrubsole go through the bowling power play without taking any wickets. They're so reliant on Eccleston then to come in and make breakthroughs, and she just doesn't do that against Australia, and that then becomes a much more of an issue. She sort of exposes that frailty at the top of the bowling.
We'll talk next week about kind of what England can look to do going forwards. But you know, looking just back at this tournament, I think it's just simply that Australia have been too good. They're too far ahead, you know, and it's worked out exactly the way that we said it would work out 6 weeks ago. That Australia have come in, they've steamrolled everybody, and you know, we're all left reeling from the after effects.
I think this is the day that we'll look back on as the day where Meg Lanning's Australia sealed their status as a truly great, all-time great side.
Absolutely, yeah. If they hadn't won this World Cup, I'd have been the first person to stand up there and say, you know, you still can't call yourselves a great side until you've won a 50-over World Cup. But have they proved that they can do it? You know, and they've saved absolutely the best for last. A brilliant performance by Australia in the final.
And Alyssa Healy. We haven't even talked about Alyssa Healy. We've done 13 minutes and we haven't talked about Alyssa Healy, who was just brilliant today. I guess we're going to wrap up in a minute. But, oh my goodness, I was struggling even to find the words to capture
her. One of the great performances of all time. Again, I mean, I don't think it's quite up there with the Harman Monster performance, which was under more pressure and with less support from teammates and things. But it was still an absolutely enormous innings. It kind of took the template from her last final appearance. I mean, how many people have won Player of the Match at a World Cup final, two World Cup finals in a row? She took that performance and she just turned it up another level.
Yeah.
And there was no answer. And she seems to take so few risks in doing that as well. So
she was obviously dropped in the 40s. I think she was on 41. So England kind of paid for that. I think I calculated that their two drops between the Haynes drop and the Healy drop had cost them 150 runs.
They weren't easy chances, though, were
they?
You said that they were the chances that you need to take if you're going to win a World Cup.
Neither of them would have been an absolute specky, would they?
That's true.
Weren't regulation, but they weren't specky, so that England should have held them. They didn't. And you know, Healy and Haynes to some extent made them pay. So congratulations to Australia. I know that we get a bit of stick sometimes for being anti-Australian, but it's just because you know, sometimes they're so good and it's quite infuriating to watch. It was quite difficult to watch some of today, because when Australia were batting, it was just like, let's get on the bus and go home, guys.
Yeah, if this was boxing, the referee would have stepped in and stopped it about 25 overs and gone, look, this is, you just need to just leave it. It's that Simpsons kid, isn't it? He's already dead.
Okay, well, on that happy note, should we wrap things up for there,
yeah.
Sid?
We'll be back next week with a much more full and more organised post-mortem to kind of look at what England can do going forwards and perhaps what Australia need to do going forwards. We might have some other news about, you know, we think there might be some retirements coming up, so we'll be looking back on them as well. We'll see you same time, same place next week. Goodbye.
Bye.